Hi, this is Jonathan Ford from Unwed Sailor and Roadside Monument, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say
you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
I had a couple beers last night, but I think it's out of my system at this point.
What's your poison? What kind of beer are you into?
Well, you know, I used to be a pretty big drinker, and I've cut down or cut back, God, probably 95%.
Wow. Okay.
So I used to be a total booze guy. I mean, it was all about whiskey, mm-hmm. and then I kind of switched to vodka, and now, since I don't drink that often, I'll usually just do, like, an mm-hmm. IPA.
Yeah, me too.
It's so, like, rich and hearty, and it's, like, you know, have a couple of those, and I get a buzz off, like, one or two of those now. Like, my tolerance...
My tolerance is through the roof. My God, I could drink a growler and do brain surgery if I was smart enough anyway. But my problem with IPAs is that everybody's gotten so good with craft beer. Everyone has a good IPA.
Right.
So they're all good. Like, everyone's like, you should go on Untappd and rate it. And I'm like, they're all good, dude. I don't know. Like, I know when I have one that blows my mind, but then I know I'm not getting it again either. So I enjoy it at the time.
Right.
Okay, whatever. But everybody has a killer IPA that's around 7 or 8 ABV, and okay.
Yeah.
Ramble on.
there's a one here in Oklahoma. There's a few breweries here now, I think. Well, I know there's at least one or two, but they have an IPA called an F5, and that's just kind of my easy go-to, you know. There it is, yeah, right. The F5. I don't have to think about anything. I just say it. It gets handed to me. I drink it, you know.
Is it a local? Is it like a distributed IPA, or is it like a local tap thing?
I think it might.
Like, who makes F5?
I think maybe Marshall. Maybe I don't know. You know, I don't. I'm not like a beer. I don't know a lot about it. I just kind of was turned onto it by a friend. Know F5, and I know it has a green handle.
Coop Ale Works?
Yeah. That's Oklahoma. That's from Oklahoma.
Yeah, there you go. We are a craft brewery based in Oklahoma City, dedicated to brewing full flavor beers with the greatest attention to .. And then I would have to click on that to read the rest.
Right, and aren't they all? You know.
Sure. I mean, that sounds like the bio they lifted off another website.
To every beer company there is. Strive right to be on. The best.
F5 IPA from Coop Ale Works. Somebody go find one and try it and let me know how it tastes. Because I can't take this guy's word for it. He's a whiskey guy.
Not so much whiskey anymore.
Well, you were.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, it got me into some trouble here and there. So,
oh boy, you want to start there?
I still have some scars to prove it.
Okay. I have some good news for me and bad news for you.
Okay.
I have a lengthy list here.
Okay.
Of things that I should touch on as I talk to you.
Okay.
It's the longest text I've ever received.
Whoa.
And it's from Matt Putman.
What? Matt's
he's my man on the
He's asking you he's my man questions to ask me.
Well, I asked him because I was like, okay. I feel like I'm dying to talk to John only because I want to get to know him. I feel like I know tons of bands you've been involved with. I don't know anything about you.
Right.
I just know that I remember Roadside was like a formative band for like, they were like I say this every show. The show's not about me, but I'm explaining to you why I wanted to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up a metal kid. I grew up a dude that was like only allowed to listen to Christian music. Of course, I didn't listen to only Christian music, but my mom doesn't know that. And she doesn't listen to this podcast. So
you're safe.
But yeah, I'm safe. I think I'm safe till she figures out how to download a podcast. But Roadside was like one of my indie bands, you know? If you want to use a loose terminology.
Yeah.
Because I was listening to like The Crucified, Death, Metallica, all Scattered Few. I was all over the map, and Roadside kind of fell in with that Sunny Day Real Estate. What the hell is this stuff?
Right.
You know, and that's why you're here, because Roadside Monuments to this day they're one of those bands that I get excited when I get to introduce people to them.
That's great. When
those hipster indie kids that are like, I don't like metal. Yes, for whatever reason. And then I go, okay, you ever heard of Roadside Monument? And they go, no. And I introduce them to it. And then like 2 weeks later, they text me back. And they're like, holy shit, dude. Like 8 hours away is awesome. And I'm like, I told you. You know? So that's why we're here.
Well, that's great, man. Yeah, that's great. That's really interesting to, you know, I don't even think of Roadside in the way of people today being introduced to it. It's just such a long distance memory for me. So that's sure. Kind of exciting to think that there's people discovering Roadside today.
To be fair, you just kind of got back together with Roadside recently and did some shows with Doug and Matt. There had to be somebody standing in that club that never heard you before. So that's not too far fetched, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess, yeah, I didn't really think of it like that. But yeah, that's exciting to me. You know, I wonder what people would think of it, because it's not, you know, our sound isn't really a current popular sound, or you know what I mean? It's
right.
Can be a bit dated. You know, it's
I don't know.
But I that's really cool. I'm curious what people would think. Just a new listener running into Roadside Monument today would think.
I can't give any accurate statistics on it, but I definitely know everybody I've ever introduced Roadside to came back with, whoa, it's really good.
Well, that's awesome.
You know? So that's why you're here, buddy.
Cool.
Mr. Ford, I'm so happy to be talking to you. I feel like I've been chasing you down for a while.
I know. Yeah, it's been a little bit. We locked the day down like what, 3 days ago, and here we are.
Yeah. Finally, here we are. So I've known Matt Putman for a long time. I met him out on the road at Cornerstone when he was beating on trash cans and garbage can lids with Living Sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And we became fast friends because he was the guy in his metal band that got made fun of for listening to stuff that wasn't metal. And I was the guy in my metal band that was like, you know, Further Seems Forever. You know what I mean? Like I was getting teased about everything. And me and Matt kind of struck a chord, and he introduced me to his group, Snail Hunter.
Right.
That side project that he had with a buddy of his from back home.
Matt Depper.
And that sounds right. Matt Depper, the guy who I feel like has been involved with everything.
Yeah,
right?
he's played an Unwed Sailor as well.
Yes, he has. You're tying it together for me. Thank you very much. And I feel like Matt and I have stayed in touch for, that was 2001, man. We've been in touch for 15, 16 years.
Wow.
And now he's my man on the street when it comes to talking to you, because I was like I said before, I'm excited to talk to him, but I don't know much about him as a person. Roadside has always been like this enigmatic. I don't know much about the guys. I just really dig the band, you know?
Right.
So I'm excited to have you on, and I just kind of wanted to step through your... okay, no, I don't. Actually, I don't want to step through everything you've ever done, because this would be like a seven... It would be like an Encyclopedia Britannica. You're a prolific guy, and you're in like 700 bands, and I can't cover all.
Well, and you might actually remind me of something that I've forgotten that I played in at one time, too. So, and I might not even
that's what
have
I'm hoping.
Much information if I forgot about it, you know.
fair enough. For starters, Scott Mellinger says hello.
Oh, cool.
And he would love to talk to you
again. Yeah, man, I'd love to see him and talk with him. It's been a long time for sure.
Yeah, definitely. He said he was totally stoked to hear that I was talking to you.
Cool.
He says hello. This has become like a hub. This has become like a hangout for
all the old band guys.
I know, right? So let's start with the most recent endeavor that you've shoved out there. Unwed Sailor just came out with a brand new EP like a couple minutes ago.
Right. It came out in March.
By way of comparison with everything that I have on here, that's the newest thing, right?
Yeah. So basically, it just came out. I mean, we're still touring on it, so
right.
Mm-hmm. It's a fresh release for sure.
I missed you in Philly. I know you guys play. Philly has become like this weird. Philly got weird on me, man. Philly used to be where you went to see shows on Saturdays, and now Philly has become the place where you go to see shows on like Tuesdays. And if you don't, and if you live 90 minutes north of Philly, I kind of can't get down there, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So I missed you. Sorry about that.
Well, that's okay. I mean, we'll be back.
Good.
I'm sure we'll be back next year.
Aim for a Saturday for us old working guys.
A Saturday? Yeah, you know, that's the weird thing about touring, or the complicated thing about touring is, you know, a lot of times you just don't have a lot of control about what day you hit a city.
I know.
And people have said that to me. They're like, why don't you play here on a Friday? I'm like, well, the routing didn't work, and this club wasn't available, and that club was, and we had it. So yeah, it's like this complicated, like, puzzle maze that you have to go through to book a tour.
Every city on the map wants you to play Friday and Saturday, and that means you just for 5 days you're supposed to sit in the van and twiddle your thumbs, right?
Right. Yeah, and spend a lot of money.
That doesn't work out
right.
So I want to arrive at the new EP, and I definitely want to play some clips of some songs here. I've been listening to it to kind of bone up to talk to you and everything, and I really love it. Unwed Sailor
is cool.
Like, Unwed Sailor, if anybody needs me to explain it to them, having never heard it before, it's like a band that specifically writes soundtrack music, except you guys aren't on a soundtrack. It's just got this vibe to it. How do you explain Unwed Sailor to someone that's never heard it before?
Ooh, that, uh, it, I get asked that a lot. You know, you'll get the, well, what do you sound like thing? And that's, it's difficult to answer, or at least I find it difficult to. I'm so inside of it that it's hard for me to hear it on the outside, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you definitely you nailed it with the soundtrack thing. I'm definitely aiming for it to be a soundtrack to something. I don't really, with Unwed Sailor songs, there's not really a focus of, oh, this song is about this or this song is about that.
Right.
It's very open-ended. For me, it's just how the melodies make you feel.
Yeah.
You know, how the rhythms make you feel. I like to make music that takes the listener someplace or even takes them back someplace, like a time of their life, a memory. So that's really what I'm shooting for with that band.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I don't try too hard in Unwed Sailor, as far as writing or recording. I'm really into the idea of just letting it happen.
Okay.
Just letting it flow. Not overthinking things. You know, I'm the guy that likes to go in and like do a record in 4 days.
Okay.
I just, you know, and there have been times I've regretted that. Like I'll listen back and I'll think, oh man, I totally should have done this here, or that sounds kind of weird, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But I tend to really trust in intuition and, you know, those first few takes, you know, those first few ideas always seem to be the most inspired for me.
I like the idea that I've always liked the idea that the recording is a snapshot of what that song was at that time. And
yeah, totally.
If I go see Unwed 6 months later, I recognize the song, but it's got what you've done to it since then added to it, which is a little different, a little bit more exciting because I have the recording. I can listen to that on the way to the show, on the way home from the show, tomorrow, yesterday. That's always going to be that's not going to move. But I like the song. I like the idea of here's what the song sounded like at the time we were in the studio, and now here's what it sounds like now. And 30 years later, when we're a jukebox and the fans just want to hear our old hits, here's what they sound like now. Kind of like when I went to see the Police, they decided to screw with every song because they were like, man, we don't want to play like that again. You know what
right.
I mean? Which is cool. I dig that, and I respect where you're coming from.
Yeah, you know, and that's actually kind of something I try to be sensitive about. And, you know, because, you know, the Police, for example, you know, if I go to see the Police, I'm dying to hear Every Breath You Take.
Sure.
And I want to experience that song like I've experienced it since 1980, whatever. You right. know what I mean? Like,
right.
I actually think that's actually one of my favorite songs of all time. I think it's just completely genius the way it's written, and just the emotions, how they go up and down. But so I want to be sensitive. If somebody comes to see Unwed Sailor, you know, and they're really wanting to hear a certain Marionette in the Music Box song,
okay.
and you know that record is basically toy instruments and us hitting our legs to make drum sounds. You know what I mean? It's like,
it's a weird record.
So, but, you know, we're going to play like a rock version.
Sure, right.
Of a Marionette song. And I sometimes I get concerned because I, you know, I don't want to bum the audience out in the way that they're not connecting to it in the way that they did when they heard the record the first time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I want to be sensitive to that. So, but the one thing that, you know, one of the things that I really put a lot into is the live set and crafting the songs in new and different ways that are exciting,
mm-hmm.
you know, to me. like doing a Marinette song as like a huge rock song is exciting for me. And
right,
but I want to do it in a way where the audience can still connect to that feeling that they felt.
Right.
So that's really important to me. Just with live shows. You know, it's interesting. I almost feel like there's more crafting and chiseling put into the live versions of the albums than the actual albums sometimes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You want to go in and record an album in 3 or 4 days, and it's kind of a snapshot at that time, but then you want to drag a very difficult to reproduce sound like Marionette out on the road and play 23 shows of it. Yeah, more thought kind of does go into
the album. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to duplicate this 3 dozen times, you know? And I have to make it sound consistent. I have to make it sound good. And you also don't want to stand there and be like, oh, my God, this sounds like shit the whole time you're doing
it. Yeah.
So, yeah. Of course, a lot of thought goes into it. I can respect that, too, you know?
And you know, a challenging thing right now that we're dealing with, Umwet Sailor is currently a three-piece. Mm-hmm. So it's just bass, drums, guitar.
You got six hands.
Yeah, so it's like, and if you listen to pretty much every Umwet Sailor record, there's like layers of guitars and percussion and keyboards. And so, you know, transferring that to a three-piece rock band can be very challenging as well.
Sure.
But I'm up for the challenge. I've always been into three-piece bands. You know, Roadside was a three-piece band.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like the Jesus Lizard, for example. I mean, I know they're a four-piece with David Yao singing, right, but the actual musicians, like, that play the notes, that was a three-piece band. Mission of Burma. You know, I've loved the way a three-piece band sounds.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you're walking a tightrope too, because there's not, mm-hmm, a lot of room for error.
Sure.
So it's a challenge, you know, to play these Umwet Sailor songs with just such limited musical instruments. But I'm really enjoying it, though. It's kind of been, well, you know, we were a three-piece band in the early days. And the guitar player just used a loop pedal, a boomerang pedal, and he would do multiple guitar loops. And that was actually when Matt Putman was playing with us. So Matt would have to, without any kind of earphone or, you know, headset or whatever, play and lock in with those guitar loops.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we would have an amp sitting back behind him. So it would just play, the guitar would play through the amp, and I was just amazed at how he could lock into that.
I was going to say, if anybody can do it, it's Putt. He's
oh man,
solid.
To this day, it blows my mind. Like, I'm, mm-hmm, just like, how did he do that? But now it's way less complicated. It's like, it's just straight up three-piece rock band, you know?
Got it. Okay, you want to get into this Matt Putman text?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm curious. I feel like Matt knows me pretty well, so
he does. Oh my God, this is one of the longest bubbles my phone has ever received. No need to be scared. We're gonna ease into this.
Okay.
And he even put it in chronological order, dude. This guy's amazing.
Wow, he's very. You know, here's one thing about Putman. He, on every tour that I've ever been on him with, he writes in a journal, and he keeps like super detailed descriptions of everything that goes on. Like, he showed me he has like just cases and cases of journals.
Really?
I don't know if he still does it, but he was constantly writing and like documenting everything around us constantly.
Dude, what a killer podcast that would be if Matt Putman just sat around and read his journals.
Oh, it'd be amazing. I mean, and this was back in like, you know, early like 2000 or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if he's continued, you know, he's got about 17 years worth of that stuff.
Wow. I want to talk to
and
him.
And I'm
about
sure
it.
You know, he probably was writing even before that, you know. So yeah, something to talk to him about.
I will. I'll get on the horn with him shortly. He wants to know about growing up in Tulsa, what the music scene was like when you started to get into it, and he mentioned the skating scene. I don't know anything about that. Apparently, you skate.
Not as much as I used to, but sure. Yeah, I was the '80s Bones Brigade kid, you know.
Bones Brigade.
Oh yeah, like the Pal Peralta team, Tony Hawk, Tommy Guerrero, Lance Mountain, like Nautas Kappus, Santa Cruz Skateboards, the whole '80s skate scene.
Okay.
I was deeply, deeply into that, and I mean I've carried that with me. I still have I'm looking at probably 50 skate videos in my little bookcase here.
Really?
Yeah, you know, skateboarding, it was kind of the first thing that, right outside of playing with G.I. Joes, skateboarding was the first thing that really grabbed my interest. And this was probably 85, 86.
I could hang with you with the G.I. Joes. I did not skate. I hung out with skaters. I could not get my tubby ass to balance on that skateboard, no matter how many times I fell on my coccyx. I couldn't handle it anymore, and I was like, "You skate. I will flip the cassette tape. That's my."
Well, yeah, it's skating's fun to watch too. I mean, I do totally. More watching today than
right
actually
on.
Skating, but
right.
But yeah, it was my first kind of coming of age thing.
Right.
You know, it's it just completely spoke to me, and I just loved the individual aspects of it. Like, it was mm-hmm. I've never really been into team sports. That's never really made a lot of sense to me. Football, baseball, basketball, I would play them or try to play them, but I never really understood the rules. You know,
okay.
I just knew, okay, the ball goes in the basket, that's cool, or I run across this line, I win.
That's cool, okay.
You know, but that never did anything for me.
Okay,
But skateboarding did everything for me.
Okay.
You know, it was I would go out, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and just skate everywhere. And it was, I was able to really express myself as an individual through that,
mm-hmm.
Just working on tricks and, spending 3 weeks in my garage, 8 hours a day trying to learn an ollie, and then finally
wow.
getting an ollie,
mm-hmm.
With Agent Orange blasting on the the tape deck. It's just, to me, that was just pure magic.
Got it.
So to this day, skateboarding is really exciting for me. I keep up with it and still watch skate videos all the time and check out new companies and actually on our last West Coast tour we were in Santa Barbara. We made a special stop in Santa Barbara because that's where Pal Peralta is located, and we went to the Pal Peralta skateboard shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like a little kid in there. Just they had the cardboard cut out of Animal Chin, from the Search for Animal Chin, and you get your picture taken in it, and just the old school skate shirts and it was amazing. I just loved it. I have to
send you a link to one of my former guests. His name's Ray Gers. He's the lead singer of a band called Bad American, and he's the lead singer and bass player in a band called Tile. He's from around here. And he got out. He went into the military to get out of. He just hated what was going on when he was a kid. And when he got out of the military, he started a skateboard company. Still going, dude. He's my age.
Oh,
he's early
awesome.
40s. Yeah. And
yeah, that's so great, man.
Yeah, he had a couple guys go pro. I don't even know what that means, but he I know that he had a skateboard he had a video premiere at some sort of an art gallery here in Pennsylvania. We went to see it one night, and he was like crying because he was like, "Oh my god, this means so much to me that this kid went pro," and he like built him from the ground up, and it was awesome, so awesome to see. And I kind of felt like stranger in a strange land. I don't speak their language, but dude, something touching happened, and they were all like touchy feely, huggy, and everything. And I was like, I can get it with that, you know. It's pretty cool, pretty cool, very family, very family.
Yeah, and you know, just the hours and hours that go into like learning tricks, and you know, the fear aspect.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh my god, yeah. How many times did you hurt yourself?
Well, I was lucky. The only major injury I ever had was I pulled ligaments in my ankle.
Okay.
I was launching off a launch ramp, and I just landed wrong.
Okay.
So I was lucky. But, you know, there's just so much goes into skateboarding. And that makes sense that, you know, you would get emotional about it. You know, all the hard work, you know, it just takes years and years to get to it, especially today. Like, it's just superhuman, you know, the tricks that people are doing, and it's just mind blowing. But, you know, that takes years and years to get there. And a lot of just not caring if you die, you know. but, you know, Tony Alva, he just turned 60. He's an old school skateboarder. He's just a legend, and the guy is still skating, and he's still amazing. You know, that's awesome. So yeah, I mean, skateboarding, you got me there. Like, I could go on for hours about it.
I can't hang with you, but I'll let you talk for hours. There's,
right.
There's probably people listening that are into skateboarding that are like, hell yeah, you know, but that's cool.
Yeah, man.
That's neat. When did the music stuff start? At what point did you get off the skateboard and grab a bass?
Well, there was music before that. Music has always been there. It's always just floated in my life. You know, I like as a little kid, you know, I started listening to movie soundtracks.
Like what?
Well, mostly John Williams.
Okay.
You know, like anything like Spielberg, you know, George Lucas, that kind of like trio I was just obsessed with. Okay. You know, the Ewok theme in Return of the Jedi was just like everything to me. Okay. So I was really into movie soundtracks, and one of my favorite things to do as a kid was I would just... my parents had one of those super old school, huge, like furniture piece record players, you know, where the speakers were built in.
Yes, I had that.
Yeah. And there's like an 8-track player in there and all that stuff.
Yep.
But, I would just put on movie soundtracks, sit against the speaker and just read books. It was just my favorite thing to do. Mm. And it was funny cause you know, kids would be like, my friends would be like, "Hey, let's, you know, what are you doing today?" And I'm like, "Oh, you should come over." And they're like, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I'm like, "Well, let's like, you know, let's read books and listen to records." They're like, "Oh, well, I got to go." So
no one ever invited me over to read a book before, John.
it was a bummer. Like I can't believe I actually had friends back then.
You suck. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Yeah, I kind of sucked.
Let's
but
read
you know,
books.
I dipped my toe into G.I. Joe and Hot Wheels and stuff too. But
who was your favorite G.I. Joe? Let's get into this.
God,
dude, I'm gonna throw it out there. Dreadnoks.
Snake Eyes.
Oh, right on. Snake Eyes.
I really
like
Snake Eyes.
That whole thing, right?
Destro was cool. Destro was cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I loved that cartoon series too. I was super into that.
Oh my god, yeah, them and Transformers were like the reason I existed.
Oh, Transformers was a great cartoon series as well.
Yep, I was into it.
Do you remember when the Transformers movie came out?
Jonathan, we could have a whole separate podcast on like the fact that, like, when Optimus Prime died, I cried.
Right.
I don't give a shit who knows that. When Optimus Prime turned gray and his head turned to the side, I was like, it was like watching a family member at a funeral. It was horrible. It was traumatic. And as a matter of fact, there's a cheesy sitcom called The Goldbergs that's entirely based out of 80s stuff. And he did an entire episode around how excited he was to go see the Transformers movie, and then Transformers were dying in the movie, and how it like totally screwed him up. And I'm turning to my wife going, see, this is the shit I was telling you about. And she's like, oh my God, you people are all crazy. You know?
Yeah, it's really traumatizing, funny. Man.
Totally. Yeah.
But you know, my big memory from that was I saw it in the theater, and I was sitting there, and I remember they were flying in a ship or something, and one of the Autobots said damn.
Right?
You remember that? And I remember every kid in that place, their jaw just dropped.
I'll tell you when it happened. He said it was they were trying to open that crystal thing. They were trying to open that thing that Hot Rod stuck his fingers in and was able to open. and that's when the Stan Bush song started. You got the touch. You got the power.
Right.
Right. He couldn't open it. And he's going, open, damn it, open. And he said, damn it. And I remember I remember turning my friend and saying, holy shit, he just cursed.
It was like such a big deal. Cussing. Like,
I know, right?
That was a huge moment.
I know, dude.
And guaranteed,
right,
like, how many kids that like us that experienced that to this day, you know that they still think about that.
But we just landed there. Yeah, we're here now. Yep.
Yeah, like that would be such a defining moment in like our lives. Like, we heard a Transformer cuss in a movie theater. Like,
right.
Just the were those just was it just like so innocent?
Yeah.
Like,
oh my God.
Know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it was. Oh my God, it's so many, it's the base of so many of these conversations with, like, I'm going to swing way forward here, but like the whole like Christian scene and the whole Cornerstone and the whole Tooth and Nail thing, where it was like one false move, one slip up, and it can ruin your entire career. But the people who were criticizing you and threatening to not buy your records were doing the same shit, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like, I just got done talking to Kurt from Believer. And he was like,
yeah,
he got criticized for wearing a Sepultura t-shirt. And I was like, dude, we were all listening to Sepultura. Like, who was mad at you about that? That's awesome. And he was like, I know. Like, we got remixes from Roadrunner from Sepultura in our studio. But there were people who were like picketing us and threatening to not buy our records over it.
They probably sold more records because of that.
Perhaps, maybe. It's such a screwball thing. I guess I'm jumping way ahead. We went from, I mean, like three sentences ago, we were talking about the Transformers movie, and now we jumped into the Christian industry. I can't fix all the world's problems. You know, we got to slow down. But yeah, I feel you, dude. That's how innocent it was when I heard a Transformer say, damn it. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I think I'm a man now. I'm a man.
Oh yeah,
I heard a robot say a bad word.
My voice definitely went down an octave after I heard that.
Walked out like me and my friend Anthony Palandro. We couldn't even look at each other.
Open, damn it, open,
dude! You're making me laugh so hard. That's awesome. You remember the G.I. Joe series? When they would do like mini series through the entire week, Monday through Friday was 5 episodes. Do you remember the Weather Dominator?
I don't know if I remember that.
Oh man! Like my grades suffered that week because it was like I have to get home, I have to focus on this. Yeah, there was a whole piece of machinery that could change the weather, and you needed 3 components or something. It was ridiculous. Yeah, dude, it was Cobra and G.I. Joe were like racing to get these 3 things, and it was.
I'm sure I saw it. I just don't remember. With G.I. Joe, I always remember knowing it's half the battle. But you know, the thing that was weird for me as a kid I would ask the question. I would, you know, you'd always hear that on G.I. Joe, and I would be like, well, what is the other half? And it took me a long time to realize that doing is the other half.
Man, that's solid.
Isn't that weird? Like,
I'm gonna write that down. Doing is the other half. That might be your title. Doing.
Oh, did you not know that was the other half?
I don't think I ever wrapped my head around it because I whatever.
I was the only one in the world that had not figured that out.
No. I'm oblivious. And somewhere right around Transformers and G.I. Joe is when I started like, oh, there's girls and all that went to, you know what I mean? Like that all fell
right. Knowing doing that didn't matter anymore.
No.
Yeah. So knowing is half the battle. Doing is the other half.
How did you put that together?
Man, it was one of those, it just hit me one day. I felt so dumb because it was so obvious.
Yeah, but dude, I'm 42 and you're just hitting me with it now. I feel dumb now. At least you felt dumb 30 years ago.
Yeah, this was probably 10 years ago that was like this revelation.
You're sitting around thinking about G.I. Joe and figure that out?
The phrases, they just stick in your head.
Yeah, totally.
You know, over the years, you know, and that's going to, you know, the G.I. Joe thing is going to pop in your head. You know, you're going to be talking about it like we are now, or, you know, you'll see on Netflix that the G.I. Joe series is on there. Oh, so, of course,
no.
That
Don't tell
phrase
that.
Is going to pop in your head.
Don't tell me that. I'll like have to take
I think time. It is, or it's on Amazon or something, but yeah, you know, it was just one of those things where the phrase popped in my head and it just hit me. I was like, doing is the other half.
Right on.
And I was like, wow. Like, it's so profound.
Uh-huh. Finally. It is profound.
Finally, I've captured the true essence of G.I. Joe.
Finally. In your 30s.
Yeah. Man.
Where did music fit into all this?
Well, so, you know, I was doing the movie soundtrack thing. Then I just started getting into the pop radio stuff. You know, Casey Kasem's, you know, like just whatever was on the
40.
Radio.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, you know, and you know, that I to this day I love 80s music. It's just my favorite. Super pop 80s, like, you know, Belinda Carlisle.
Yeah, dude, I'm in an 80s cover band.
Nice. I would love to see you play sometime.
It's a piece of work, this thing. But yeah, dude, it was a blast.
Well, if you ever need my full attention, and if anyone ever needs me to just stop, put 80s music on, and I am just focused, like, and I'm really happy. So
I will see you. Complete focus, and I will raise you. I just found Vision Quest soundtrack on vinyl at a yard sale 2 weeks ago. Walking around with my wife, I bought it for 50 cents. I'm a winner.
Ooh, I don't Vision Quest. I don't know if I've seen that. It sounds very familiar.
Hang on.
It was a
hold on, right?
A sci-fi movie, right?
I've never even seen Vision Quest. I have no idea what it is, but I have the soundtrack.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, it sounds amazing. I would have bought it too. Like still to this day, I always go to the movie soundtrack section, and I'm actually all these late, you know, like Mondo and La La Land.
Okay,
there's so many of these cool record labels right now reissuing like movie soundtracks, and a lot of them are like the weird sci-fi fantasy stuff.
Right.
And I've really been obsessing over those.
Right on.
But yeah, movie, you know, movie soundtracks, and I got into the pop radio stuff. And then during that same time is when I discovered skateboarding. And of course, I would think with most people, when you discover skateboarding, you discover punk.
Okay.
So, you know, I'd be buying Thrasher magazines and I'd see an ad for Agent Orange, or Black Flag, you know, and then you start skating with other people and like, you know, you have the boombox out there and like Dead Kennedys are playing and you're like, oh, who's this? And they're like, oh, it's a Dead Kennedys. So then you go up to the mall and you buy a Dead Kennedys tape. And so that, you know, I discovered punk rock, and through that, you know, kind of the more new wave alternative, you know, New Order, the Smiths. And then that, you know, I mean, was that was another huge milestone for me. Punk, new wave, alternative music.
Mm-hmm.
Which
what
is
year, what year is this? Ball, like timeline this for me.
This is going to be late 80s.
Okay.
You
were definitely more skater punk new wave stuff than you were like the hair metal and stuff that was coming out.
Well, see, I dabbled in hair metal too. And the thing that was interesting about it is I was clueless that there was any kind of barrier there.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I remember I went to the skate competition and there was a guy skating, you know, they were playing like all this punk stuff. And then this guy started skating and like to Bon Jovi. And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, I like this song. And I remember one of my skater friends looked at me. They're like, you like Bon Jovi?
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
I was like, yeah, like why am I not supposed to like Bon Jovi? They're like, Bon Jovi sucks. Like, right. They're not punk.
Right.
And that was like this first realization, like, oh, okay, there's, you can't like something because.
Yeah, there's rules.
You know,
there's rules.
Yeah. And that was weird to me because, and that, but, it, and that's never made sense to me because I liked metal and I liked hair metal. You know, I love white to this day. White Lion's one of my favorite bands.
Dude, preach, but at the preach, same brother time, Ford.
Yeah, and but at the same, you know, but you know, there were times when I would lean more towards one than the other. You know, one, you know, eventually I was listening to way more New Order than White Lion.
Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah, but you can't.
But
not,
they White
but you
Lion
can't
was,
not like Skid Row. Because one of your dumb friends in the Mohawk said you're not allowed. Yeah, dude, Skid Row fucking kills.
Yeah, great band. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I started going into that, and but you know, again, the punk, the new wave thing, was just as big as a life changer than as skateboarding was to me.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today if it wasn't for hearing the Smiths or New Order.
Sure.
For the first time.
I hear that. I hear that in it too.
So
I don't hear a lot of Skid Row, but it warms my heart to know it's in there somewhere.
Well, there's definitely some Vito Bratta from White Lion in there.
Right on.
But then again, he was super influenced by Eddie Van Halen. So
sure.
So yeah, you know, that's kind of been my musical thing. And then, you know, I went through kind of this weird phase. In the 90s where, you know, I just hated Led Zeppelin, you know, any kind of like classic rock, like I didn't get Pink Floyd. I specifically remember Matt and Doug and I in a van on tour and they were like, I think we were talking about music and I think I mentioned something like, dude, I just don't get Pink Floyd, man. I don't like it. They're like, no, you don't understand. They're like, listen to this. And so they played some Pink Floyd, and I was something off Dark Side of the Moon, and I was just, dude, I don't get it. I don't like it. So, I had that stubborn phase where I was closed-minded to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, you know, it was just kind of probably a bit of snobbery on my part.
We all did that, dude. It's fun.
Yeah. But you know, today it's like, man, Pink Floyd is rad. Led Zeppelin's awesome. You know,
yeah, they kind of are.
So it's something that you know I had to grow into, you know, and realize the brilliance of those bands.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I mean, as far as music, I'm still on a journey, like discovering new things, and you know, I think today probably, you know, the things that. The new things in my life that I'm discovering are, you know, kind of more of the pop, the modern pop stuff. Like I thought, like that Miley Cyrus song, Wrecking Ball, I thought that, you know, that's a great song. I like to find elements of things that maybe I'm, you know, you're quote, not supposed to like.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to find elements that I do like in those things. like there's no walls or boundaries to what you can get out of music, you know, no matter what it is.
Yeah, I can dig it.
I mean, there are things that I have a really, really hard time getting anything out of, for sure.
Right.
but yeah. I like to be open to it and not limit myself, you know, like I did with Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. I was just limiting myself, you know. So
But that Wrecking Ball song just kind of reminds me of something that, like, Pat Benatar or the 80s thing, like there's like using that as a weird example. Boy, did I not think you and I would be talking about Miley Cyrus, but to use it as an example, there's some sort of splash of familiarity with it, with it something about that takes me back to it. Kind of reminds it, you know, that song always reminded me of We Belong to the Night, We Belong to the Night.
Yeah, that's, you know what I mean? Great song.
Which is like, I grew up there.
And maybe that's what I'm connecting. Maybe that's what I'm connecting with.
That's what I think. That's my theory, is I think some of the best songs that come out now, are they're just rehashing the shit that I already like. That's why I like it. Like that Gautier song, dude, you're not going to meet, you cannot, it's not possible for you to meet a bigger Police fan. And that Gautier song that came out with...
Yes, I remember that.
Thank you. That's a Police song. it's like eight Police songs glued together into one rad pop song, and I like it, and I don't care what anybody says, you know. But it's because I'm already familiar with it in a weird way, you know.
Yeah, and I for me personally, if you inject anything 80s into anything, I'm gonna have a connection.
You're bought in, sure.
Like
I get that.
Oh, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
I'm 43.
Yeah. Okay. I'm right there with you. I'm right behind you.
Yeah. You know, and you know, for like that first Haim record, I really connected to that record. I think it was that 80s injection they had. They kind of had that Fleetwood Mac 80s thing going too.
Which band?
You know, I was never Haim.
Haim.
H-A-I-M.
I've never heard of this band.
All-girl band.
Never heard of them.
Yeah. They just put a new record out recently, too.
Okay.
Also, the last three Ryan Adams records.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a Ryan Adams fan, and then he just went on this, like, kind of 80s production thing.
Yeah.
And I'm so into it.
Yeah.
I've just really been into his, even that Taylor Swift covers thing. Like I really enjoyed it. His new record I really liked. Mm-hmm. And then the three back, I don't know what the title is, but I really liked that one. So yeah, you know, I'm still discovering new stuff, and yeah, I mean, music is, you know, really important to me. You know, it's in my blood every day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm awake or asleep. So it's still excites me very much.
Let's go way back, man. Let's talk about Mr. Bishop's Fist. Beginning of that.
Yeah, that was I think that was 93-94.
Okay.
And my friend Tim Henderson, who, oh, I think you've interviewed him actually.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Tim. It was basically me, Tim, and this guy Mike Jameson play mm-hmm. guitar. And yeah, man, we were we loved heavy music. Like, we were super into Helmet, you know, like Clutch.
Yeah.
You know, just these heavier kind of groove based bands. But we were having a really hard time finding more of it that we liked.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, well, let's just do it ourselves. Let's just write music that we want to hear in that vein. And, you know, at that point in our lives, none of us really had any experience playing music. I was in a couple bands before that. You know, they were kind of just like some thrash, like trying to like make it sound good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Nothing notable. But with Mr. Bishop's Fist, I felt like we, it was so weird because we were just these three kids into heavy music and just started playing whatever just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just started getting attention. It was really bizarre. Like at one point, like the Crucified's manager, was talking to us and, it was just wild. You know, I was working at this pizza place and like, you know, I'd be on the phone with him like, yeah, like apparently the Crucified's like manager's really into us. And, you know, what are we going to do? What do we do with that? You know, and we just made this little demo tape. And Tyler Bacon from REX Records flew out to see us play a show.
Wow.
And, he was super hyped on us, and I remember he was super into us, and Brandon Ebel was super into us, but the thing is, you know, these people, all they had heard was our demo tape, and I thought the demo tape was pretty decent, but live, we just did not have it together. Mm. We didn't have a bass player, and we were just finding dudes that, like, with like tattoos and a shaved head and that looked mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to play bass. You know what I mean? It's like, and we were in Oklahoma too, so it's like musicians were kind of in short supply.
Mm.
So we were not a good live band. Like, I think there's actually one video of us playing live up on YouTube of us playing at Cornerstone one year in 94.
Okay.
And it's like a minute 30 clip or something like that.
Yeah.
And it actually didn't sound that bad because at that point we actually found some musicians that were, you know, good enough to like lock in and it wasn't a mess. But yeah, man, Mr. Bishop's Fist was really fun. You know, Tim and I, at that point in our lives were really close, and, you know, we were always hanging out and listening to music together, and, you know, it's your first band, you know, everything's really exciting. You know, your first shows. Yeah, man, it was a good time. It was definitely a nice way, like a nice step, you know, to kind of start cutting your teeth and being in the music world, or, you know, playing music world, I guess.
How did you fall in? How comfortable were you falling in with the whole Brandon Ebel tooth and nail, quote unquote, here we go, Christian industry? Like what was your background on that? Was it just kind of a coincidental thing, or were you a bunch of youth group kids and you were Bible thumping? What was that all about?
Well, the Christian industry thing, it was an interesting aspect in my life because I grew up going to Christian schools. Okay. So I was kind of planted in it.
Yeah, me too.
There was always a part of me that fought against it.
Hmm.
You know, my Christian school was very, you know, all the rules. You know, they had the handbook. Your shirt had to be tucked in at all times.
Yeah.
Your hair had to be this length. You had, yep, to have a collar on at all times.
Yep.
No
jeans.
Yeah, your pants can't have outside pockets. You know, shit like that. It's like, what?
Outside pockets?
Yeah, and at that time, it was like impossible to find pants without outside pockets.
What do you mean, like cargo pants? What do you mean outside pockets?
No, well, any pocket that was sewn on the outside of your pants could not be there.
So, like, you couldn't have, like remember Bugle Boys with the zipper and the...
Right.
You couldn't...
No Bugle Boys.
Gotcha. I wore Bugle Boys.
Yeah. And so, you know, at this time in my life, I'm, like, skateboarding and listening to, like, punk rock, and I'm just like, fuck
you
that.
You need pockets. Like, I gotta put my cassette somewhere.
Yeah, I gotta put my skate key somewhere, right. You know?
My skate key.
Yep. But yeah, you know, so there's this thing where you're growing up in this atmosphere of, you know, the threat of hell.
Yeah.
You know, and
dude, I went to an accredited school, an academic institution, where I actually took a test, and the question was, the earth is, and the blank was left behind years old.
Yeah.
And the correct answer was 5,500 to 6,000. And I, wow. Like, I got credit to go to college for that. And looking back on it now, I'm like, oh my God, it was like,
it's so bad, man.
Nonsense. And, you know?
So, you know,
with
that,
you. Right there that, with you.
Yeah. So, you know, it's ingrained in you, but you know, as a kid, it's like, you don't really believe it. You're in it.
Just accept
it. And you're honestly kind of scared because, you know, people are telling you if you don't believe this, then you're going to burn in hell.
Right on.
So that you're scared. So you follow out of fear.
Yep.
So take that growing up in that. And then all of a sudden there's this record label that's involved in the Christian music scene or whatever, and it's you know, you're drawn to it because it's different than what you've experienced, and the music's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, whoa, like Wish for Eden. Yeah, I mean, that kind of sounds like Helmet. You know what I mean? But
right.
It's like, but it's something that you're excited about because it looks like there's this whole scene out there that maybe you can relate to a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at that point with Mr. Bishop's Fist and all that, you know, we started hanging out like with Focused and Unashamed and those dudes. And I remember Jason Martin was a big Mr. Bishop's Fist fan. He actually wanted to like produce a record for us.
Wow.
Which would have been amazing. I wish that would have happened.
Right.
But, so, you know, I mean, you live in it, and but, you know, there's something not quite right about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, if you want to move forward to the roadside aspect of it, at that point, you know, and
I'm just sticking a thermometer in where you were at and what it was like and everything. And if you came from that kind of a home or if it was totally like, yeah, yeah, you answered it. I'm just curious.
Yeah. So, you know, with the roadside aspect of it at that point, you know, I was at a time in my life where I, you know, had grown enough to realize that, you know, in my opinion, the religion thing was just not for me. Like, I was not into it. And
what does that mean?
It made no sense. It didn't. It contradicted itself. It was kind of bullshit. I mean, honestly, religion or Christianity in my life, what I've noticed, there's been two different times where I kind of ran to it. And both of those times, by choice, I ran to it. And both of those times in my life have been very chaotic. I didn't really know who I was. I was depressed. You know, and so I needed something. I needed something to get me through.
Okay.
And so I reached for the most familiar thing that's always been there growing up.
The hard wiring.
Right. So right. Then that's like, okay, well, it's never worked for me before, but I'll go ahead and go through these motions again, and hopefully I'll get some kind of peace through this, or something to make me feel better. I just wanted to feel better.
Right.
And so those have been the times the two times that I went back to, is because I was really hurting and confused, didn't know who I was, and I just wanted to feel better. So that's what I went to. But it was the same thing. It didn't help anything. You know, if anything, it made me more confused about who I was and what I was going through. So that was good for me, you know.
Thank you for unpacking all that. I like hearing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, it was good for me because it solidified it even more of me figuring out who I am, you know, right. And realizing who I am, and that I don't need that, you know, to feel better or to find myself. So with Tooth and Nail, you know, as far as Roadside goes, you know, we were friends with Brandon. And, you know, I worked at Tooth and Nail at that time. I was in the mail order room.
Oh, okay.
So we were friends, and Brandon liked us. So he was like, hey, I want to put out your records.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, that was amazing, you know, because he paid for us to go into Robert Lang and work with Bob Weston and Jay Robbins. And, you know, it's like a dream come true for us, going in these like amazing studios and recording these records that we couldn't have paid for. So, you know, we were thankful for that. And, you know, being on the road, you know, we were in, so, you know, like some 1972 cargo van, like the exhaust is leaking into the back of the van, and we're sleepy all the time. We can't figure it out. You know what I mean? We were just like breaking down.
Carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah, you know, and Tooth and Nail would always bail us out, man. Like, we'd be broken down on the side of the road, and we'd go to the payphone. You know, Brandon, we're outside of Boston. We can't make it to the show. And he would send a check, you know, or wire some money for us to get our van fixed. So,
right on.
So, you know, I mean, they were our friends, you know. So that was our relationship with Tooth and Nail. It was like our friends put out our records and help us because they believe in us and like what we're doing. So we, as far as like the idea of Christian bookstores being offended by Sperm Ridden Burden and, you know, not carrying our records, and we would hear that and just like laugh about
right.
It wasn't like anything to us. We're like, well, we're playing Lounge Acts in Chicago tonight. You know what I mean? So we're playing right. with Don Cab at Fireside Bowl. So that was our musical life perspective.
Right.
We were, you know, we were outside of that in our minds. But the thing that sucked about it was, you know, that was the age of, you know, if you're on Tooth and Nail, that was like a major backlash towards you. Like literally, you know, Doug would book our tours, and we learned really quick that if we talked to a club promoter and said we were on Tooth and Nail, they would not book us.
No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, it was like...
Oh, I like this stuff.
The door would slam.
Right.
But
because they were afraid you were going to show up with like Striper and you're going to throw Bibles or what? Like,
I guess. There was just... That's nonsense. You know, yeah. So, you know, and we were just like... We wanted to play rock clubs. You know, we wanted to play the same clubs that all, you know, the Touch and Go bands were playing, or the Merge bands, or,
yeah,
you know, that. So the cool thing at that time, Tooth and Nail was distributed through Caroline Records.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug would call these clubs and they would ask what label we were on, and we would just say
Caroline Records.
And we would get the shows, like, easy. So we developed that little trick to actually be able to play venues on the road.
Did Brandon know you were doing that? Didn't he care?
Doug would sneak into the Tooth & Nail office and book the tours on their phones.
Right.
So Tooth & Nail paid for all those long distance charges. I don't know if they knew that or not.
They do now.
Right. I do know Brandon, he, as far as Roadside Monument goes, I remember him saying, you know, Roadside is not a band that I'm going to make any money off of, but they give my label legitimacy.
Street cred.
Yeah, street cred. That's what he always said about us.
That's awesome. That's a huge compliment.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we were just having a good time, man. You know, mm-hmm. we were out on the road and meeting new people and doing what we love to do, you know, making records but you know, another cool thing was that, you know, we did get to, you know, like we put out, that song on that Crank compilation. And then actually at the end of our first run there, J Tree was really interested in putting out our records. So, you know, I mean, we had a lot of friends and we were spread out and, you know, people were liking what we were doing and, you know, it was a good ride, man.
Nice and clear.
As the Story Grows is a part of Lavera Productions.
High five. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at As the Story Grows and visit the site at asthestorygrows.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss anything. Visit the Bandcamp link in the notes of this show for free cover songs, some free tunes, and merch. If you like what you heard and would like to help, there's a Patreon link on every episode, or you can look for the dollar sign on the website for one-time donations. If you can't afford to donate, that's totally okay. Tell a friend, retweet me, and give me a good rating on iTunes. Send your guest requests and any feedback for the show to asthestorygrows@gmail.com, and thank you so much for listening today.
Take care. Bye-bye.